Bobby Moore, written and read by Tina Moore. Here's my Bobby now, head up, sunlight on blonde curls. He's been out there for nearly 2 hours, but he looks so elegant and calm, he might just have stepped onto the pitch. He's chesting the ball down, a short pass to Borley, who passes it back. Bobby looks up. Where to now? I catch sight of Jeff Hurst, exhausted but still heading for the German goal. Oh, Bobby, don't risk it, Big Jack Charlton screaming at you. No one can hear what he's saying, but it's what we're all thinking. We're 3-2 up. We're in the final minute. Kick the blankety thing into the stands. Judith Hurst and I are clinging to each other the way we've done for most of the game. Every conceivable emotion has been wrung out of us. Pride, rapture, excitement, despair. We watched the shot from Jeff bounce in off the crossbar in extra time. Or did it hit the underside and bounce out again? Wasn't it a goal after all? Judith was shouting, "It's in! It's in!" And I was backing her up with, "Oh yes, it's in!" The German supporters behind us were shouting back, "No, it isn't!" We must have sounded like the audience at a panto. But it was all right. Goal given, 3-2. The World Cup is nearly ours. Bobby finds Jeff with the perfect ball. People start running onto the pitch. In living rooms all over the land, Kenneth Wolstenholme is telling the nation they think it's all over. Jeff shoots. The ball lands in the net. And to continue with those words of Kenneth Wolstenholme, which everyone in England must know, it is now. Around me is an explosion of delirious joy. Judith and I are out of our seats, hugging each other. Bobby climbs the steps. He glances at the Queen's lily-white gloves and carefully wipes his muddy palms on his shorts, then dries them on the velvet balustrade before receiving the trophy. I can't help smiling. It's such an elaborately thoughtful gesture, so typical of Bobby, Mr. Perfect. And when he holds up the cup, I cry. Not out of happiness because England have won, but because of what he's been through. Watching him being carried round on his teammates' shoulders, I just think how magnificent he is. Here's someone who, only a year and a half before, unknown to all but a half a dozen people, had undergone a terrible ordeal with cancer and overcome it. Now he's every schoolboy's hero, holding up the World Cup. To me, that's the real magic of the day. What a man. The 30th of July, 1966, must be a date branded on every English person's memory, the day we won the World Cup. Even if we won it again, the boys of 1966 will always have a special place in everyone's heart. They were the first. When I think back on that time, the sun always seems to be shining, although in fact it rained on the afternoon of the final. It must be something to do with the era in which it took place. The boys of 66 were part of the fabric of the 60s, swinging London, the Harold Wilson government, student protests, flower power, the Beatles and the Stones, white boots and miniskirts, Bieber and Mary Quant. It was a gorgeous, glorious time when Britain seemed youthful, successful and optimistic. As Judith Hurst and I were driven in an England bus with the rest of the wives, we felt so proud and full of expectation. And the first people we saw when we took our seats were Terence Stamp and Jean Shrimpton, who was probably the face of the 60s. She looked so glamorous, absolutely stunning. The build-up to the final had been overwhelming. It was all anyone talked about. But I could still hardly believe what was happening to us. Bobby had already become football's first pin-up. Terry O'Neill's photo of him, surrounded by models, had appeared in Vogue in 1962. Not only that, he had just graced the fashion pages of the Daily Express, kicking a ball in a Hardy Amis suit. But this was something else again. I was being recognised in Bond Street. Shops would loan me designer clothes.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?